Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Lords of Limited. My name is Ben Warney, and joining me on the line, as always, Mr. Ethan Boggart Mischief Sachs. Ethan, you've been doing some goblins. You've been playing Red Black 2 weeks before anyone else. Name a more iconic duo.
I mean, look, I'm here to deliver. You called it. You said Ethan's going to be just mad over Blight or whatever, but it's true. I think it's great. We'll talk about that a little later on. It's week one of a format I'm having a lot of fun with. It's hard for me to wonder if I can decouple that from the amount that I'm winning as well, because I think that's having something to do with it. But I'm having a blast, and I feel like we have some very unique takes. Are these takes too hot? Are our strats too hot? Are we going to get the criticisms that we're too off the beaten path to be taken seriously?
No, our audience can handle it. They know what they're here for.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, because you talked about this a little bit before starting the show. You're like, are we starting things off the bat mad? And Ben is referring to Magicians Against Data. Are we mad about the data? He's repping the sweatshirt if you're watching us on YouTube. And I said, I went full dad. I went, I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed. Like when I look at the 17 lands game in hand win rate data, I'm just confused. It is just reflective of a completely different experience than I have been having on both sides of the battlefield.
Now, I will say elves is good. Like, that's what the data says. Elves and merfolk, the data says elves and merfolk are good, and elves and merfolk are good. I just think we had talked in our reflections about the new year about, do we need to give a level one assessment of the format before we dive into weeks 2, 3, and 4? Because you and I have a tendency to skip week one and be ahead of the curve. And I don't think we need to do that here. The Typal decks are so obvious, but I think also we'll get into it, a bit of a trap to go after early. Yes, and not some of the less traveled routes, but I think if you draft some merfolk, if you draft some elves, put them together, like what the decks are doing is pretty obvious, and they are very powerful when they come together.
Yes, for sure. But the format is so much more than that, and I'm excited to pick your brain or talk to you about your experiences. Because again, we have largely not talked. You know, I put together some show notes. You added to them. I really love what you put in here. I think we're, despite doing, I was worried because I was like, I'm going to put down my thoughts. I'm winning a lot and I feel really strongly about what I'm doing. And I'm also pretty confident that we are doing different things.
We're doing different things, but I think a similar approach and drafts have just steered us in different directions maybe. But I've also been crushing. Like, last night was the first time I finally cooled off and hadn't, like, all I'd done was trophy 5-3-6-3 for like my first 10, 12 drafts. And I hit some 3-3s, some 2-3s last night when I finally started facing some really, really good elves and merfolk decks. But I'm back on track with my latest draft. I'm like 5-0 right now. So I feel very good about seeing the matrix of this format. And one thing, I mean, I don't know when to get into it, but I was streaming and one thing people were saying was this feels like Bloomborough as like a criticism of the format. And I could not feel more differently. Like, I think this is infinitely better than Bloomborough. It's similar stuff, Typal decks, but it avoids the problem that Bloomborough had of like, well, I got to try to draft this thing in the first 3 or 4 picks and just pray that it's open. Or you could make a similar criticism of Ixalan at times. This format offers you the tools to navigate drafts well and to accrue powerful positions in the draft and leverage those powerful positions that you put yourself in the draft. And I'm loving the format. The gameplay at times is not always delivering, but I really enjoy the drafts and I've really enjoyed the different builds of the decks.
I'll chip in or chime in and say that I think the gameplay is awesome. I've had it. Maybe it's because of the Trinkety Goblins decks that I've been playing a lot, but like, I will double down on the playing off curve that we felt last week and that I am finding myself going against my heuristics a lot in this format. And that kind of like gut check or, oh, I actually think I shouldn't be doing this has been a cool wrinkle in this format that has made the gameplay exciting to me.
That's what feels the best to me. This feels like a return to Magic of 10 years ago, like pre-podcast for us. Like, I can be on the draw and my first play is a 3-drop and feel totally fine.
Yes.
Or I can be on the play and my first play is a 3, sometimes even a 4-drop, and I feel totally fine. You just have time. Like, you have some breathing room, and not always, and you can't do irresponsible stuff, like the usual caveats, but compared to formats of the last 5 years, this is definitely an outlier in terms of you're rewarded for patience, I think. I feel, yes. And that's how I like to play Magic, and it's very refreshing to be rewarded for my patience.
I do not default. I'm not a patient person in general, and I do not default to being a patient Magic player. And so that's perhaps why I've noticed like that it's going against the grain for me a little bit, but I'm recognizing that. I know that's how you have to engage with this format, and I'm playing by the rules. And I think, yes, I really want to make the caveats of like, we're not saying aggro is bad. We're not saying people can't curve out on you. Those two, like Merfolk and Elves, do it very, very well sometimes. But I don't feel like they're the boogeymen, not even close. And they're definitely disruptible decks.
Yes, for sure.
Okay, let's do some housekeeping. Let's dive into our week one info dump. Patreon page, patreon.com/lordsoflimited is where folks can go to give back to the show if they so choose. The Patreon is the way to support the show. If you like what you hear each and every week, if we're part of your week, it was really fun getting to read some YouTube comments last week of people like treating the episode drop as kind of like a cozy event. Like they were like, ah, I'm all snuggled up on the couch. I got my blanket ready to watch the show. I was like, I love that. I love that we're part of people's, you know, weekly routines like that. And if you found some value in it, whether for comfort or for your gem count or for your LGS clout, and you want to give back to the show, the Patreon page is the way to do it. We have some great perks over at the Patreon. One is access to our Discord, which is just an excellent community of like-minded limited folks. And we also have access to our podcast feed where you get this episode a day early ad-free and also access to our weekly bonus episodes of Lords Unlimited. So if any or all of that sounds of interest to you, head on over to the Patreon page, and we want to shout out our new patrons the first week that they join. This week, we're welcoming Anthony, Liam, Avery, Thin Yao, Andrew, Becca, Chris, Kyle, Evan, Tristan, Phil, Nuno, Steve, and you love to see it, Ethan is my hero. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We really appreciate your support.
We really appreciate everyone's support except Ethan is my hero. Cannot say thank you enough. And you were talking about being cozied up last week. People are definitely going to be cozied up this week. The podcast is dropping on Monday, and I don't know about Pittsburgh, but I am sitting in a foot of snow in southern Indiana right now.
Yes, thank you for mentioning that. We have snow falling. We celebrated Jonah's birthday yesterday. We had his party yesterday, so my folks are in town. They were staying at an Airbnb with lots of stairs with the impending snow. They were like, can we bunk up with you so that we don't have to travel in the morning? So we got a full house here over at the Tupperware mansion, and I imagine we may hear some folks making audio podcast appearances. It can't be helped. We will press on. Let's dive into your revised format truth. So I think I came in with a kind of, you know, you'll see the episode title is Forecast Calls for Hail. We're going to repackage a sort of bread acronym for drafting the format. But I really love that you put these revised format truths together, because I think this is going to let us sort of dive in to the nitty gritty and really just get to talk about our experiences and our approach. And then we can take a little cute acronym content package and put a bow on it at the end.
Yeah, and these are the for real format truths. None of that joking around, wink wink. Like this is the legit stuff.
Yeah.
So number one, have a plan to win the resources war if you want to go long. And I think that is the defining feature of this format to me, is that games default to going long unless you have a specific plan to do otherwise. And if you don't have a plan to accrue resources during that long game, you are toast. Like, it's very easy to win games if you're playing a deck that can accrue resources and your opponent is not. That's one of the freest ways to get wins in the format.
Yes, 2-for-1s and 3-for-1s abound. Unexpected assistance as the draw 3, discard 1. Burning Curiosity, I've just been calling the red draw 3, but that's the 2 in a red. Exile the top 2, or if you blight 1 when you cast it, you exile the top 3 and you can play them until the end of your next turn. Like, those are pretty format defining cards in my mind, because of just like people have talked about how the games play out in such a way where you're not ending the game with cards in hand. It gets to a top deck war a lot. And again, asterisk of yes, people can beat down, but by and large, the decks I've been drafting are grindy. And so games come down to who's got a 3-for-1, who's got a draw 3. Those are huge in this format.
Yeah, it is shocking to me that Burning Curiosity has a 51.3% game in hand win rate. Like, that is, if I put a list of 5 commons that matter in the format, and Burning Curiosity is on that list of 5 commons. So I think that card is extremely underrated right now. Yes. And I think if you are not building your decks in such a way that they could take advantage of a card like Burning Curiosity, would encourage you to do so.
So there's the big bursts of card advantage, like Unexpected Assistance and Burning Curiosity. But then there's also just like more common two-for-ones, like Unbury, which gets back two creatures from your graveyard, or Graveshifter, which is the changeling 4-mana 2/2 that gets back a creature. Like, those compound turn after turn as well. And if you're packing more of those in your deck than your opponent, you're going to win the game.
Same for Mist Meadow Council, which is the 4 and a green 4/3 ETB draw card that costs one less to cast if you control a Kithkin. I think people are viewing this as a Kithkin card, and it is just a good card if you put changelings in your deck. And even if you only have a few changelings, like, you can still run it. A 5-mana 4/3 draw card is fine in this format. Yes. And I really like Mist Meadow Council outside of Kithkin decks is where I've liked it the most. Card selection, also extremely important, and there are some commons that do it very well. So Flaring Cinder, we mentioned this last week. One, is it for the 3/2 when it enters, and whenever you cast a spell with mana value 4 or greater, discard a card if you do draw a card. Not flooding out is extremely important. Like, you want to be able to control stopping at 6, 7, 8 lands. Once you start to get into the 9, 10 range, it gets a little dicey. So Flaring Cinder, Wary Farmer, which is the Kithkin hybrid, the 1 Selesnya, Selesnya 3/3, at the beginning of your end step, if a creature entered, you surveil 1, and Gristle Glutton as well, 1 in red for the 1/3 Rummager. You can tap it to blight 1, discard a card, draw a card. That card also can do some serious work. I know you've been gristling a lot of Glutton over there.
I have been gristling quite a bit of Glutton. I was just checking my top drafted commons because Gristle Glutton was there, but it has been unseated by Cinder Strike, another card we will talk about a little later. It feels good to have that as my most drafted common. I don't know what people are doing out there. I feel like Flood, I'm usually I want to run more lands. I never want to miss my land drops. But because I feel like games go so long in this format, I have been noticing flooding out more and more and more, like hitting pockets of land in those top deck wars. If you hit 3 lands and your opponents hit 1 land and 2 spells, you really feel it. And so these cards are super important. I want to shout out a couple others. Morkan's Eyes is just so important in the Elves deck because of this, the repeatable surveil. That's the 1 and a green enchantment that then is like spider spawning, like crack it for 6 and get a bunch of 2/2 elves. But the surveil 1 on that along the way is massive. And I also want to shout out, you talked about this card last week as like, I'm not happy that this is
Gathering
in the format.
Stone, it's the worst. It's the worst. I hate that card being in this format.
I think Gathering Stone is what I want to say about this. This is the 4-mana artifact. When it comes into play, you choose a creature type. The creature or spells of that type cost 1 mana less to cast. And when it enters and in your upkeep, you basically surveil 1. You look at the top card. If it's a card of that type, put it into your hand. If it's not, you can bin it. That, you don't need to only play that in
heavy
full
type
of
decks. Yes.
But if you're doing what we're outlining here, which is, you know, putting 6 changelings in your deck, and then you've got a Nameless Inversion, or you've got the Mana Rock, or you've got one of the typal commands in your deck, like, you can get to about 10 count, and that's probably around the minimum I would want in my deck to play Gathering Stone. But that can be a Vivid deck. That can be a Blight deck, and you're naming Tree Folk or whatever. Like, and the surveil on that card is massive.
The surveil is massive. You'd need to be pretty heavy type. Taking turn 4 off to play that card if you play it on curve is tough sometimes, depending on the matchup you're facing. But
for sure,
by and large, the card's very good. I wish it didn't exist in the format. Made my thoughts clear on that last week. But the last point here about number 1, which is having a plan to win the resources war if you want to go long, is some decks don't. And you have to make sure that your deck has reach, whether that's unblockable damage, whether that's a bunch of creatures with flying, whether that's pings to face with goblins by throwing your goblins at your opponent's face, whether that's tweeze. But you need to be able to break a board stall via unblockable damage if you're not planning to engage in that resources war. And to be clear, it is fine. Like, that's a reasonable strategy to say, I'm not going to engage in the resources war, but you need to be able to get that last 6 to 8 points of damage through no matter what your opponent is doing.
Specifically, pings to the face applying to goblins is something we'll talk about a little later when I outline that deck.
All right, format truth number 2. Maybe controversial here, but you shouldn't try to shoot the moon for a typal archetype early in the draft. And to be clear, if you are not familiar with the game Hearts, that's a reference to the game Hearts, where hearts are worth points, and you're trying to not win tricks that have hearts in them. But there's this like this reverse rule that if you somehow manage to get all of the tricks with all of the hearts in them, you get really good things. Like, terrible stuff happens to your opponents and you get all of the benefit. So that's what that reference is for. And it kind of refers to going all in, because if you try to shoot the moon for hearts and you miss and somebody else gets one heart, you score tons of points. So you shouldn't go aggressively after elves or aggressively after merfolk or aggressively after goblins in the first three picks and just mentally lock in after the first three picks and say, well, my first three cards were great elf cards. Elves is great. I'm going to go after elves. I think that is, it's the quickest way to end up with a busted deck, but it's also the quickest way to end up with a truly terrible O3 deck.
Yes, that is, I had an O3 deck like that where I was, we did a draft log together in Lords Unlimited last week, and you were sort of like wanting to bop around and be like, I'll take this type of payoff and this type of payoff and whatever. And I didn't quite understand what you were talking about. And then I tried that in a draft and it didn't work out for me. And I'm not, this is not me like blaming Ben or anything, but it was just, I was like, oh, this is not how I want to engage in this format. This is like, people have described this in Twitch chat to me as like a reverse gumption format. It is the opposite of build it and they will come. It is, I want to stay as open as possible, because if a typal deck is open, it's going to smack you in the face. And you don't have to worry. I've had this multiple times. Pass a Merfolk Lord, Merfolk is still open, even from the left. You know, like, you can pass cards and still get into that deck. You're not missing the ship or whatever. So I really have adjusted to, and this we'll get into with our acronym later on, of like how I'm trying to navigate the drafts so that I don't end up with Elf Lord into Merfolk Lord into whatever, or what you're talking about of like elf card, elf card, elf card. Oh, elves isn't open. I can't pivot.
Correct. Yeah. And I exactly what you said. Sometimes you still get there anyway, which is fine. But just doing it early, like, I've had the experience multiple times when I've been streaming of opening the two black green elf lore that's the 4/4 that when he or another elf enters, you blight one and then you can tap three elves to proliferate. And Twitch chat's like, oh, this is awesome. Elves is the best deck. No, 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 no. Like, this is going to be such a good draft. And I'm like, I don't really want to take this card. Like, I'm going to, but I don't feel good about this as a pack one, pick one. And finally, I had the same choice twice in a row. The first time I took the Elf Lord begrudgingly, and it was between that and Moonlit Lamenter, I think it's called, the 2 and a white 1/5 that can remove a counter to draw a card. And I took the white card the second time because it just feels so bad to me to start with a card that I'm less than 20% to play. And especially the way I'm drafting, because I'm actively not trying to gumption into it or force into it. I'm just so unlikely to end up in any given tribe that I start in.
Yes, I feel like, I mean, that card is obviously better than this, but I would lump in, I was talking about to this, talking to folks in our Discord about this yesterday, of like, I would consider those weak packs where I have to take, if I have to take a Lord, and I'm talking about the uncommon Lords, I have to take an uncommon Lord or an eclipsed card, pack one, pick one, I'll do it. There are packs where that is the best card to take. I'm giving no weight to that pick. That is like taking a middling common to me, because if it's open, great. But I am not then going to give weight to that. I'm not going to have tiebreakers and then take a Merfolk card to go with my Eclipse Merfolk. I'm not interested in drafting this format that way.
So where are you at on, I think I know the answer to this, but I'm curious. Where are you at on Cinderstrike versus an Eclipsed Uncommon or an Eclipsed Lord to start?
You mean a typal Lord or a typal Lord, yes. Card? I'm taking Cinderstrike.
That's where I'm at too. Like, it's not particularly close for me.
And this is where I'm not mad, I'm just disappointed comes in, which is like, I don't understand how Cinderstrike has an average game in hand win rate. Cinderstrike to me is still the best common. This is the single red deal 2, or if you blight one, it's a deal 4. It's incredible. It's an incredible card in my mind.
What's incredible about it specifically for this format is this format really encourages you to load up on 3 and 4 drops, and Cinderstrike gives you double spell turns on turn 4 and turn 5 that no other card in the format gives you.
Impactful double spell turns.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. If on turn 4 you go Eclipsed Goblin and I Cinderstrike your 4 drop by blighting onto my Eclipsed card, that's massive. That's a massive turn.
Yeah. Number 3, Lorwyn Eclipsed rewards you for putting yourself in powerful positions in the draft.
Yeah, this is sort of unpacking that last part a little bit. I think we talked about this, but we're avoiding first picking typo gold cards. Like sometimes you have to, like I'm not taking bad cards over them, but as we'll talk about when we get to the acronym, like the order that I'm taking them is lower than you might think. And hybrid cards, though, they're not all created equal, but they do excel. And especially if they're hybrid changelings, they're powerful. We talked about this a little bit last week. They're powerful, not in your final deck necessarily. Like Mischievous Sneakling is not like an impactful play in the game necessarily, but the flexibility it provides you in the draft is so massive.
It's like the golden egg. So for those of you who are like, what's the golden egg award for like the last 5 years, if you weren't listening to the podcast, in Eldraine, in Throne of Eldraine, there was a card called Golden Egg that was 2 mana for an artifact, ETB, drew a card, and then you could crack it to gain 3 life or crack it to filter mana through it. And that format was all about mana bases and building good mana bases. And Golden Egg, while not a super intrinsically powerful card, lets you leverage your power in the draft. Like picking it early lets you delay decisions, read what was open, put the Golden Egg in your final deck, and wait to make decisions about, okay, I'm going to go mono green, or okay, mono blue is flowing. Like I'm going to go mono blue with a splash, and this Golden Egg is going to help me with that splash. Those changelings early on in the draft function similarly to what that card did in Eldraine, in that you take them early, and by specifically changeling, I'm doing it again what I did last week, the hybrid cards, the hybrid changelings, and the
Stop saying changelings.
And the hybrid changelings are the best ones. Okay. Because they give you the typal elements to tie the room together, and also the mana flexibility to tie the room together, and vivid stuff later on, if that's the route you end up wanting to go on. They do like triple duty in opening 3 different paths for you when you pick them early. And to be clear, I'm not navigating for like taking the two and Orzhov 2/3 lifelinker over a card like Cinderstrike or something like that.
No.
I would maybe think about taking it over a Lord if I'm not near that Lord's type, like pick 4, pick 5, because I want to leverage myself in a powerful position in the draft. And that's what taking the, like you want to take those cards in the picks 4 through 8 range or something in pack 1, pick 1, because they set you up in powerful positions in the draft.
Yes. I also want to shout out specifically the Eclipsed Flamekin. That's the elemental Eclipsed card. This is the most flexible of this cycle because it's only a double pipped 3-drop. So you can play this in a blue X deck, a red X deck. It's very good in vivid decks. And if you're loading up on changelings like we are trying to sometimes, like this will have 7 hits in your non-elemental deck or whatever, plus hitting islands or plus hitting mountains. Like, this is also a flexible card, and getting that power from draft picks with also the upside of if I end up in an elementals deck, this card is excellent. Like that's how I want to be navigating drafts.
Correct. And I think to really spell out, because I think you and I understand what we mean by powerful positions in the draft, a really powerful position in the draft would be like, it's not what you were talking about, like where I've got like an elf lord, I've got a merfolk lord, no. I've got a goblin thing. Like that's not a particularly powerful position in the draft. It's flexible, but it's not powerful. Powerful is like you have 5 cards that are all going to make your deck, but that also have like 3 or 4 different options of different types of decks to draft to go along with those 5 cards. Like they're going to end up in your list, like they're 5 green cards, and maybe you're going to put those 5 green cards in a Kithkin deck. Maybe you're going to put those 5 green cards in an Elves deck. Maybe you're going to put those 5 green cards in a Vivid deck. And having those 3 routes all open to you after your first 5 picks, while also knowing that all 5 of your cards go together, that's what you should be striving for early in the draft.
And that's why I like red so much. Red is my most drafted color by a lot. Like when I look at my top commons, like the first 6 are red cards. Like I really like getting into red because I feel like all my paths are like all the red cards work and all my paths are open. If I end up in goblins, great. If I end up in elementals, great. If I end up in a vivid deck, great. If I end up in a blight deck, great.
Yeah. Like red, red is so good in this format.
And it has the most commons that matter. Like we've already talked about them. It has the draw 3. It has Cinderstrike. It has Gristle Glutton. It has the, you know, probably the early frontrunner for Imperial Oath, the Kuldrotha Elemental, the 6-mana basic land cycler.
That card's so good.
Like, and those are, it's commons. Not every color gets a roster of commons, and red does. But I'm perplexed that the red cards are not beloved. And it might be that, like, based, if you look at game and hand win rate data, like red might be the worst color, which is not my experience at all.
Yeah, I completely agree. All right, number four, curves are more flexible in ECL. Don't play curve filler cards. Like, not do it. It is one of the worst things you can do, and one of the easiest ways. We said, like, having a plan to win the resources war is one of the easiest ways to win a game of Magic. If your opponent's not doing that, one of the quickest ways to lose is to play curve filler cards for the sake of, well, I know I need to have a curve. I know I need 7-2 drops. I know I need 5-3 drops. I only want 3 or 4-4 drops. The curve is the least relevant it has been in quite a while.
Yeah, like you can't do nothing until turn three. I mean, sometimes you can, but the things that you are going to try and do on turns one and two don't have to be board affecting necessarily, and you don't need a ton of them, because what you're talking about is they're not necessarily as important on turn two. They're also important to be able to double spell
on turn five. Yes.
So that means they need to be impactful on turn five as well.
Yes, you need to be picky about what your two drops are. And somebody was like, when I was drafting on stream, they were like, "But you don't seem to be valuing two drops." And I was like, "No, I'm valuing good cards. Like, that's if they're 3 mana, if they're 4 mana, if they're 2 mana, if they're 1 mana." And that's like, can't sing Cinder Strike's praises enough. But that's why Cinder Strike is so incredible, is that it is impactful on every turn of the game and lets you use your mana efficiently on every turn of the game, which is hard to do, and you're not always incentivized to do in this format.
Yes.
Number five, Lorwyn Eclipsed rewards patience in the draft and in gameplay.
This is, again, it's a format truth. It is a defining feature of the format. There is patience in what we're describing of how we're drafting, of like trying to lay a foundation for either getting into one of the open typo decks, which will be easy to read those tea leaves for, or being open to not having a seat that's allowing you to do that, and then having your feelers out to blight decks or vivid decks or whatever. But also in the gameplay, this playing off curve bit for value, or just like, I'm not going to snap off my removal here, or I'm going to wait and see what my opponent does. Like, that requires patience, sequencing, figuring out how to blight, like, where am I going to put these blight counters? It's just, it all matters so much. Like, I feel like you will not notice like the things that make you lose games in this format a lot, because it's like, oh, what the reason you lost is because you did that on turn two when you should have done nothing on turn two.
Correct. Well, and it finally feels good to hold removal
again. Yes.
Which is like, it's been a long time since I've said that. And if we're talking about easy ways to lose games, another easy way to lose a game is to snap off a removal spell on turn four, turn five, to try to press damage when your opponent is at like 15 or something.
Yes.
And you push 7 damage and they go to 8 and they're like, cool, I'm going to stabilize at 8 and mow you over in the resources war.
Right. Well, because then like, I feel like when that happens is when I don't have a good assessment of like what my deck is doing, where I'm like, well, usually I feel like my deck is grindy, but I have a window here to do that exact thing. My opponent's at 16. Let's push 7 damage. They stabilize. And then I'm like, oh, we're back in a resource war. And I have spewed
my resources,
my exile removal. And now you have time to find cards that matter.
And I don't want to make it sound like this is magical Christmas land. I will say the most of my losses when they come are to Merfolk decks that are curving out and keeping me off balance. Like, that is my toughest matchup for the decks that I'm trying to draft. But like you said, I've been winning so much that it is hard to not really believe in these five format truths.
Yeah. I mean, like, I don't think we need to do this, but this is easily the most success I've had in week one of a format. Like, I have not been, and I've done both. I like speed ran from plat to mythic in 4 days, and then I switched over to best of three. So I have experience in both. Don't have experience. I'm going to try and get some experience doing the like single limbs on Magic Online before the PT this week, just so I can have some ideas of what that's like, if it's different at all. But like, we're winning with this method.
Yes. Last thing is, I think it just to validate feelings, it can be frustrating in the best of one queues when you play against like a Nuts Merfolk deck and a Nuts Elves deck, and you it's easy to feel like, well, everybody has these Nuts typo decks, what am I doing wrong? And it makes you almost want to go after them harder.
Yes.
And I I think that's not the right thing to do. But I will say, like, the approach we're outlining is a very deep, skill-intensive approach. It's hard to put yourself in a powerful position in the draft if you're not used to trying to draft that way. And it goes against the grain of what you're going to see all of the other decks doing, because you're going to consistently see Merfolk deck, Merfolk deck, Merfolk deck, Elves deck, Elves deck, Elves deck. And there is another way. And there might be growing pains if you're trying to do it, but I think the format is way more than just typo decks.
I totally agree. We are in the midst of a snowstorm, so I'm introducing the hail method of drafting Lorwyn Eclipsed. So the H here in hail is for haymakers. And so this acronym is in the order that I am prioritizing cards in the first, whatever, four or five picks of a draft. So haymakers, not only I'm saying this, trying to divorce this from B for bombs, because it's not only describes bombs to me, but snowbally cards that aren't a problem necessarily, like when they hit the battlefield, but you know you'll need to answer them eventually, and the sooner the better, because they get out of hand. So cards that come to mind are like Lochmere, the one in a blue 4/5 mythic. When it enters, comes in with 3/-1/-1 counters. You pay one in a blue to remove a counter from it, draw a card, pay two in a blue to remove two counters from it, tap a creature, put a stun counter on it. Like, this comes in as a 2-mana 1/2. Is that a bomb? If it sticks around, it sure is going to be.
Well, and more importantly, it's such a good first pick, because it goes, like, you can just say, okay, I'm going to be blue, like, and we'll figure out what comes. Maybe I'm Elementals, maybe I'm Merfolk, maybe I'm Vivid, but Lochmere is going to be excellent for me.
Yeah, Figure of Fable is another one that comes to mind. This is the Selesnya hybrid 1/1 that levels up three times, goes to a 2/3, then a 4/5, then a 7/8 with protection from each of your opponents. Like, yes, this says Kithkin on it. This goes in any deck that can level it up. Any deck that has green mana or white mana in that'll have three pips of it eventually, this card goes in that deck. And it's not a bomb when it hits the battlefield. It's not a bomb when it levels up to a 2/3 or even a 4/5. But you are going to have to kill this before it gets to be a 7/8. And these are the kinds of cards that I want to start my draft with at the top of the heap.
You left out another one here, which is Brisbane Battler. One in a green for a 6/6 trample ward 2, enters with 5/-1/-1 counters. And whenever another creature enters while this has a -1/-1 counter on it, you remove one of those -1/-1 counters. This card's so annoying. On turn two, like, the ward two really is, like, troublesome for this card.
But not for Cinderstrike.
Not for Cinderstrike. My first game of the format, my very first game of Lorwyn Eclipsed, my opponent played the black mythic, the 1/1 that when something goes to the graveyard, it gets counters going away, into Brisbane Battler. I don't know why I keep saying Battler instead of Battler.
I also don't know why you're not saying Bristlebane instead of, you're saying Brisbane.
Brisbane? Yeah. Well, there we go. Just can't do anything, right? Bristlebane Battler. There we go. Nailed it. Into the 3-mana 4/2 flash, into the Elf Lord, the black green rare Elf Lord. That was their curve on the play. And I was like,
pretty good curve.
Cool format. And then have since turned it around to fall in love with
2026 resolutions happening. Don't take those early losses to heart. Okay. Haymakers is H. A. is for answers, which I am putting as a slight distinction here from removal, in that not all removal is created equal, and the cards that actually answer the things you need to get off the battlefield are important here. Like, I really value catch-all removal. I really value the exile from both the 4-mana deal 5 in red, Bog Slither's Embrace in black, efficiency, we're shouting the praises of Cinderstrike I love. And I still feel what I felt last week, which is that it is very easy to load up on stuff that maxes out on killing for toughness or less. So just be aware of that. Like, you need, if you're like, whatever, I have this experience in red black where I'm like, I've got 2 Cinder Strikes, I've got a Blight Rot or whatever. I gotta get stuff that kills 5 toughness, 6 toughness creatures. And you need to have that diversity in your removal suite.
And a couple days ago when we chatted about these show notes, I told you I thought I might switch the I and the A. I'm back on the A in the number 2 slot. I think I've gotten myself in trouble not having quite enough answers. But there's another thing that happens with answers where you can't load up on them either unless you're planning to engage in the resources war and, like, have good plans for that. But you also need, like, LR calls it defensive speed. You need bodies on the battlefield to hold back multiple creatures so that you can save your removal for the things that actually do matter. And also, like, I want to be in somewhere in like the 3 to 5, I think, pieces of removal, very efficient. Yes. Or like 4 to 6 feels right to me.
Okay, so haymakers, answers. I is for identity. This is how I'm defining the archetype, typal signposts, lords, kindred enchantments, moonlit lamenter as the tree folk, though this is maybe a little bit more flexible. That's one of the things I want to put it like an asterisk and talk to you about. Like, flexibility feels like something that needs to fit in here at some point, you know, because like I like the changelings. I don't like the changelings better than answers. I do like some changelings better than identity cards, you know, so I don't know quite where they fit in, but we've said this enough. Hammer home. I'm really hoping to not first pick a card like a lord out of a pack, because that feels like a 10% or 15% or fingers crossed approach. And that has gotten me into trouble more than it has led to victories for me.
Correct.
And then the last letter here, L is for leverage. It's a very grindy format. 2-for-1s and 3-for-1s are volleyed back and forth in the late game. You want to be the one doing more volleying. Card advantage and card selection really matter. And we've talked about a lot of these cards: Unexpected Assistance, Burning Curiosity, Graveshifter, Unbury, Gristle Glutton, Wary Farmer, Flaring Cinder, like these ways to get raw cards or card selection, surveilling, rummaging. That is all really important.
You really need both. Like, you need to get raw card advantage, and then you also need the card selection to pitch the extra lands you get from the raw card advantage. Like, both pieces of the equation, I think, are so important to win the resources war. And one thing that you didn't shout here, that you had talked about this card last week, and I am a huge believer in it now, which is Blighted Blackthorn.
It's not the stag. No, this card's really good.
It's really good. The 4 and a black 3/7 that when it enters your attacks, you can blight 2. And if you do, you draw a card and lose a life. It's not a high pick still, but it is such an important piece of the puzzle in the blight decks. Like, when you can come down, and this come down as a 3/7, draws you a card and like dumps 2 counters on a 1/1 that was doing nothing, it feels incredible. Like, and feels so depressing on the other side if your plan is trying to push damage on the ground.
Yeah, brick walls the 6/5 vivid, brick walls the 6/5 elemental that draws a card. Like,
it demands a real removal spell. Yeah. Like, one of the exile cards while also having 2-for-1 you.
Yep. Yeah, Blackthorn is good. But, and to be clear, like, it's so hard to, because we're like talking about, I'm not saying first pick Blighted Blackthorn, not even close. And there are times where, like, I have 2 of them in my pool at the end of a draft. And I'm like, do I play both? Do I play 1? Do I play none? And sometimes the right answer is a different version of that depending on the texture of the deck, which is one of the things that makes this format so interesting. Like, do you play your second Burning Curiosity? Sometimes, yes.
Almost always.
Not for me. I have not been playing second Burning Curiosity that much. But, like, that's also very interesting that both of us have different answers to that question based on the kinds of decks we're playing. Like, this format's really tough in that respect.
Like, I think what you said, like, my number one fear in this format is running out of resources. It feels horrible when you're playing for the late game and you run out of resources.
Yes, for sure.
And Hail, to recap, Haymakers, Answers, Identity, and Leverage is going to lead you to that, because the Haymakers are going to go in every deck. The removal is going to go in every deck. And then you try to drill into, like, after those picking those types of cards, then you try to drill into the core of what your deck's going to be. Is it going to be Vivid? Is it going to be Typal? Is it going to be Blight? Is it going to be a mixture of all of those elements tied together with hybrid changelings, that sort of thing?
You put this in the show notes. You're like, my creature counts have been high. I'm curious about you. So I looked at all my trophy decks. Minimum creatures in all trophy decks is 15, which is really high. Like, some of them have 18, 19. And so, yeah, what you're talking about is, like, which I feel like we should unpack a little bit, because we're shouting the praises of Unexpected Assistance and Burning Curiosity.
Yes, there's some cognitive dissonance there.
I'll put one of those. I want like 1 to 2 big draw spells in my deck, depending on the texture.
But it's so important to have. Yes. Like, the first copy is incredible, and the second copy is very good, and then after that, you don't need them quite as much. But the difference between having 1 to 2 and having none is massive.
I had a green-white deck the other day that wasn't like dedicated Kithkin, and I had good mana. I had Oko, so I was incentivized to splash blue already. And then I was like, I put the Convoke rare that it's 6 mana Convoke, pick a creature type, draw cards for each creature of that type you control. I was like, I'm terrified of running out of resources in this format. I am double splashing this card. And it was excellent for me. It was just a free draw for a lot of the time. But like, I want like 1 to 2 copies of my big draw spells. I like the 3 to 5 interactive spells, and then bodies, bodies, bodies.
And a lot of the bodies have great EDB, so they double as spells as well. So like you're getting some interaction from your bodies, but I've been in the 15 to 19 creature count, like quite happily. And a lot of that too is because I've been playing Vivid so much, and Vivid encourages you to play to the board so much. Like, it wants you to have colored stuff on the board.
So the Hail method, I think, is the little package we're putting on these format truths and the approach we're taking to the early parts of the format. I just feel like if you're thinking about this in the order of how you're seeing packs and the order that you're making picks, let's say hopefully you do get a Haymaker pack one, then you do get to take a removal spell pick two, and then maybe you're taking a leverage card pick three, or you're just taking a changeling, a flexible hybrid card pick three. By pick four, if you see an identity card, if you see a Typal Lord or a Treefolk Payoff or whatever, that's around the time that you could start to think, this could be a signal. Merfolk could be open from the right, and I can take this now. When you take a Merfolk card, pack one, pick one, you're just like, fingers crossed.
I've been avoiding that because it also feels horrible. It's so boring to draft that way. Like, I just have no interest in drafting that way.
I mean, yes, but boring aside, but people want to win, and sometimes that leads to a busted deck, but it also can lead you to making a really bad decision in the draft and watching a good deck pass you by.
Well, before we move off, I think answers is another place people can get themselves in trouble. Like, with what we're outlining of like, well, I want to stay open. Like, the 2 and a black instant put 4/-4/-4 counters on something is not what we're calling answers. Or like the 3 and a red deal 5 exile something. Like, you don't want to be second through fourth picking those types of cards. Like, the removal you want to pick highly is Cinderstrike. Where are you at on Luminal Hold, the 3 and a white exile something, gain 2 life?
I haven't played a lot of base white, so I haven't played that card that much, but I do like that the best of white's interaction. I like that better than what is Spiral into Solitude.
Spiral into Solitude,
it,
yeah.
It's like Liminal Hold, it's nice that it's a catch-all as well, because there are some artifacts and enchantments that you have to answer. And like, I've really been valuing in best of three draft, like making sure if I'm in colors that have access to, like red, black doesn't have access to enchantment removal necessarily, but it has access to artifact removal. And I want to make sure I have that in my pool for sideboarding. But I like that Liminal Hold gets anything.
Yeah. I also have not been base white that much. White, I think, is the like one of the weaker colors, because so much of it, what it wants to do is try to pressure the opponent, and that's not the axis and I want to attack the format on.
Right. I mean, I think Merfolk is a very good deck. I think that Kithkin is not.
Okay. Wow. Shots fired. All right. Moving on in the show notes to outline the key commons. If we haven't said their names enough, Unexpected Assistance, 3 blue-blue instant, draw 3, discard a card with Convoke. Cinderstrike, single red, deal 2 or deal 4 if you blight 1. Burning Curiosity, the 2 and a red, exile the top 2, you can play them until your next turn. If you blight 1, you get 3 cards. I would put Mismetal Council on this list as well. I've played tons of Mismetal Councils. It doesn't sound like you have. That's the 4/3 Kithkin that draws a card when it ETBs.
Yeah, Mismetal Council is a green card, and we don't play green cards here on this show.
I do. I know you listen, do. No, I'm team green. Team green this format.
There are diminishing returns on Unexpected Assistance and Burning Curiosity, and I want to underline that they are both important cards to have, but not important cards to load up on.
Correct. And I think Mismetal Council, not I would happily play 3 copies, assuming they're costing 4 mana most of the time. Three to four copies would happily play in that type of deck. But it's like you said with the tree, the 3/7 tree. Sometimes I want all 4 copies. Sometimes I'm like, I have 2 and I only want 1. Like, it's a very contextual thing.
Yeah.
And then the last key commons for me are the hybrid cards, the hybrid commons, especially the hybrid commons that are changelings. It's so valuable for having vivid outs, for backdooring into typal decks, for pockets of decks that are just, okay, I'm going to do a little bit of Kithkin stuff here, and I'm going to play some Mesk Middle Councils. I'm going to have some elf synergy over here, and I'm going to do that. And I'm like, just all of that being available to you because of picking those hybrid cards early is really good.
I had my first experience with like playing a bunch of hybrid cards in a sort of not fine-tuned deck. I called this deck sort of like Jund 2-for-1s. And it had the like your wary farmer, the Kithkin. It's not, I don't think that's the name of it, but the Kithkin 3-drop that surveils if another creature enters. Like, and it had, I think, only one payoff for Vivid, two payoffs for Vivid in the deck. But I just got to play a lot of really good cards that were 2-for-1s. And tied the room together because of the flexibility of all of my hybrid cards. And it just felt great to be able to navigate the draft in that way.
Correct. And to be clear, we're not going to outline Vivid this week. We'll probably go deeper on Vivid next week, maybe. But yeah. Most of my Vivid decks are solid 2 colors and picking up the other 3 colors just from hybrid cards.
It's awesome. Very cool.
All right. Format, color, rankings. Top of the heap is whatever is open. Feel pretty strongly about that. Like you don't need to try to steer into a color necessarily in this format.
Amen. Amen.
But if we're putting them in an order, I think red 1, we both agree on that. Blue 2, green 3, black 4, and white bringing up the rear. How do you feel about those color rankings? You don't care.
Good. I don't care. I'm happy to see red in first and white in last and don't really care about the rest.
Yeah. Okay. Commons that are super important to their decks. Just to shout out some things that have been sleeping. Spiral into Solitude, super important to the Blight decks. If you can turn that into upside, like we said, premium removal spell.
Can we just dial in on that for a second?
Yeah.
Blight is upside.
Not without you building an appropriate deck, but assuming you build your deck appropriately, it is very easy to turn it into upside. Yes.
And by upside, I mean either you care about, like, I honestly feel like there's a few things. One is if you care about like your things dying, like a goblins deck does, if you care about -1/-1 counters, meaning you have ways to remove them, great. But also like even for something like Cinderstrike, it's like, I don't know, man. You got stuff that can wear a counter. You got a 1/3 that did its job and now it's an 0/2. Or you got a 1/1 that came along with something and you kill it. Like, I just feel like it's either upside or it's so rarely
it's such a minimal downside. Yes.
It feels so rarely like a downside to me. Yeah.
I've been crazy impressed with Gravegill Scoundrel out of Merfolk decks. Card is so annoying. 1/1/3 vigilance. Whenever it attacks, you can tap another untapped creature. If you do, it can't be blocked this turn.
The 2/3 punch of this on 2 into the white, the 3-mana 1/3 flyer, when it becomes tapped, it gives a Merfolk +2/+0. These are best friends. Like, play this on 2, play that on 3, attack with the Scoundrel, tap that. Now this is a 3-power unblockable creature. Like, Otter Penguin fans rejoice. It's back.
It's back. Well, and this would not have been intuitive to me at all without seeing the Merfolk deck in action, but this is miles better than a 1 and a white 2/2 that when it taps, yeah, you get into life. This is so much more important to the deck.
This is a much like you kind of want, like in the Goblins decks or in the Blight decks, you want free Blight. Free tap is big for the good Merfolk decks because you're getting those benefits for free.
Correct. Bogslither's Embrace and Blight. Like, if assuming you can remotely turn Blight into upside, Bogslither's Embrace is an incredible removal spell. 1 and a black sorcery, exile a creature, and then there's an additional cost, Blight 1 or pay 3. You almost never pay 3 for this card.
Correct.
I've been really impressed with Dawnhand Eulogist in Elves. That's the 3 and a black 3/3 menace. When it enters mill 3, if there's an elf in your graveyard, each opponent loses 2 life and you gain 2 life. Data Darling, and I would say checks out with my experience from the Elves decks.
Yeah, and not surprising. The black gain and drain ETB creatures are always good.
And lastly, Foraging Wicker Maw in Vivid decks. The 2-mana 1/3 when it enters, you surveil 1, and you can filter a mana through it, and when you do, it becomes that color. I almost left this out of a Vivid deck one time, like before I'd played with it, and put it in there, and I was so glad I did because it is incredible in Vivid decks.
I mean, the surveil 1 on ETB on this is not nothing. Also,
it's not nothing. And then you're always +1 Vivid like the rest of the game. of whatever color you're missing, it's very strong. And that would be a Vivid deck that's like full Vivid before you're interested in foraging Wicker Maw. Kith Keeper is going woefully late. 6 and a white for a 3/3 Vivid. When it enters, you make X Kithkin equal to your Vivid count, and then you can tap 3 untapped creatures to give it +3/+0 and flying till end of turn. That can be a win con for a deck, one of these decks that's off typal. Moonlit Lamenter seems undervalued to me also. That's the 2/5 that comes in with a -1/-1 counter that can remove counters to draw cards. I've been insanely impressed with Omni Changeling.
Yeah.
The 3 blue-blue Changeling Convoke, and it can enter as a copy of any creature on the battlefield. That card is one of the better uncommons in the format, I think. And this one also shocks me. Tanufel Rhyme Speaker goes so late. 3 and a blue, 2/4 when you cast a mana spell with mana value 4 or greater, you draw a card. This is must be killed on sight.
Cards like this, like Rhyme Speaker, that has
a type. That's why I wanted to get into
people go, oh, Tanufel Rhyme Speaker is an elemental. It goes
and in I'm not an elementals deck. I won't take it.
I'm like, no. This doesn't care about elementals at all. Yeah. I'm with you.
Goes way too late. Boggart Mischief. Like, we're going to get into the Goblins deck, and I'll let you sing this card's praises, but it is tough in the Goblins decks. And then Prisma Basher also, just, you don't have to be full Vivid for Prisma Basher to be good, much like you were talking about Tanufel Rhyme Speaker. This says Vivid on it. If you're green-white, and you got a couple off-color hybrid cards, Prisma Basher giving +3/+3 to 3 creatures is nutter butters. It's the 4 green-green, 6/6 trample, and it gives X things +X/+X equal to your Vivid count.
I had an amazing game the other day. My opponent played Prisma Basher. They had 5. They had the full 5 Vivid for this card, and I still won.
I went to one.
I went to one, but I grounded out afterwards. And Ethan of 2025 might have looked at that ETB trigger on the stack and said, all right, I concede. not this Ethan. The other card I want to shout out here is Unbury. This is a 1 and a black instant. You can either return a creature card from your graveyard to your hand or return 2 creature cards from your graveyard to your hand if they share a type. I was watching your Twitch stream and someone was like, it's basically only good in Goblins or Elves. I was like, no. This is just a good card. Like, I have splashed this in other decks. Like, if you're valuing changelings, it is not hard to get a 2-for-1 out of this card. And I see this card go criminally late. It is like, if you look at my top drafted cards on 17 lands, it creeps up in there ahead of a lot of commons because I just get it so often and I love this card.
All right, take us home with the good boys, the Gobbos.
Okay, unsurprisingly, I've drafted this deck a lot. This is my most drafted deck so far, and I have had a lot of fun and success with this. And I think this deck is, after my first run with a version of this deck, I was like, this deck is going to be in the dumpster. In game and in
it's
like when
you have to do a lot of work to make it good.
It is extremely difficult to pilot well. And I will say, like, and that is just going to sound like me like tooting my own horn. There's no way for it not to sound that way. But like in the realm of experience with trinkety, sacrificey, red, black decks in limited, I take the cake and I have experience doing this. And I think that's one of the reasons that I am doing well with this. But so what I want to say is, a lot of games with these decks, I have won by getting my opponent to exactly 0 life, which requires a lot of planning multiple turns ahead.
Ryan Sachs would be proud.
Ryan Sachs would be proud.
Felt a disturbance in the force somewhere.
If you're out there. Specifically, the deck operates around like maximizing chip damage and like little incremental ways to get your opponent dead with 3 cards. The Signpost Uncommon Boggart Cursecrafter, black red for a 2/3 death touch. Whenever another goblin you control dies, this creature deals 1 damage to each opponent. Boggart Mischief, the 2 and a black kindred enchantment. When it enters, you may blight 1. If you do, you make 2/1/1 goblin creature tokens. And whenever a goblin you control dies, each opponent loses 1 and you gain 1. And shout out to 47% game in hand win rate enchantment. I'm going to get you up 1 draft at a time. Lasting Tarfire, 1 and a red enchantment. At the beginning of each end step, if you put a counter on a creature this turn, this enchantment deals 2 damage to each opponent. These 3 cards are necessary for this deck to win.
Yeah, I sent you a Goblins deck and I was like, well, rate my Goblins deck because I knew you'd played a bunch with it. And I felt okay about it. And I didn't have any Boggart Mischiefs or Lasting Tarfires. I think I had maybe 1 or 2 Cursecrafters.
I had 2 Cursecrafters.
But I faced the Goblin Mirror a couple times, and Mischief is backbreaking in the mirrors. The enchantment, like the drain on Mischief, is so good.
Because that's how you're trying to win. You're trying to win with chip damage, and if your opponent is gaining, like life gain often doesn't matter in this format, I feel like.
It does against the Goblins deck. It
does against the Goblins deck, for sure.
Yeah.
I want to outline some quick tips or pitfalls. What's up?
Lasting Tarfire for the Faint of Heart. Like, are you ever cutting Lasting Tarfire? Is that an always include? Is it deck contextual?
It is hard to imagine ending up in a red-black Goblins deck that doesn't blight, like, with 10-plus cards. And then, no, I'm never cutting Lasting Tarfire.
Okay.
And Lasting Tarfire specifically, so I have played Lasting Tarfire with the Boros rare. It's one Boros hybrid 3/3 that you can tap two creatures to double a triggered ability. That doubles. That's
my favorite build around in this format. It's so fun.
Card rules, play Liminal Hold, exile two things. Doubling Lasting Tarfire triggers is real. I have drained my opponent out from 20 by four chunks of Lasting Tarfire twice. And Lasting Tarfire is best friends with, I think it's called Sting Slinger, which is two in a red for a 3/3. And you could pay one in a red, blight one to deal two to your opponent. This is one of the few ways you can blight on your opponent's turn. And so you get, you know, you're doing some blight on your turn, your Cinder Strike or whatever, trigger Lasting Tarfire. Then on their turn, you activate Sting Slinger, deal two, then Tarfire triggers on their end step. And you can get them dead in a hurry.
And my experience playing against Goblins has often been, they put me in a position where, like, I'm dead no matter what I do. Either, like, I attack into them and I'm killing enough Goblins that I lose when I kill their Goblins, or they can attack into me, and if I'm killing their Goblins, I lose when I block their Goblins to not take damage. That's usually how the games end for me against Goblins. Also want to shout out with Lasting Tarfire, Burning Curiosity, because Lasting Tarfire is not worth a card, right? And Burning Curiosity to make up for that type of dead card that's only there. It's basically like a cool lava axe that can do more than five damage. And Burning Curiosity to make up for that while also synergizing with it. Very good.
So first thing I would advise you to do is, it's usually better to keep bodies around when you can until you have one or more of certainly the two Boggart cards, either the Curse Crafter or the Mischief. The cards that care about your creatures dying, you would prefer your creatures not to die until those are in play. So at blighting sequencing, I think, is also quite tricky. Like, blight onto higher toughness creatures first is good. Boggart Curse Crafter is a great card because it wears blight one really well, because then it's just a 1/2 death touch, which still threatens to trade up on mana with some big dumb things. You want to think about getting the most out of your blight in terms of creature toughness, right? If you are looking at your hand and you're sequencing, okay, I've got blight one, then I'm going to have blight two coming up. Use that blight one onto a 2 toughness creature to shrink it into a 1 toughness. And then your blight two onto a 1 toughness creature is getting you more value there because you're, you know, sort of cheating on blight, air quotes.
That all checks out with me. And another thing that I want to shout out to, that I've felt, that I think you also feel, is a lot of the common goblins are not great. Like Elder Auntie, 2 in a red for a 2/2 when it enters, make a 1/1 goblin token. It's first of all, not a good card in the format.
No.
And secondly, not great for the goblins deck, even with putting two goblins on the battlefield.
Correct. Like I will, if I'm playing two Elder Aunties in my goblins deck, it's a bad deck probably.
How do you feel about Bone Club Berserker? 3 in a red, 2/4, gets +2/+0 for each other goblin. Like, that's not what the deck's about.
I actively don't want to play it in my goblins deck.
But that's not, I think that's not intuitive.
I agree.
You haven't piloted the goblins deck yet. And compared to something like Gristle Glutton, where you'd play like, play like three copies of that card, right? Which is the 1 in a red, 1/3, blight one, tap, discard a card if you do draw a card. Because similarly, that's a way to blight on your opponent's turn for Lasting Tarfire. It's keeps you from flooding. It wears blight counters. It's going to die eventually after it's given you card selection.
I have activated Gristle Glutton multiple times with no cards in hand just to get a blight counter. Like, there's just a lot of non-intuitive stuff about this deck in terms of what cards matter for it, sequencing of the deck. Like, it's really hard. It pains me that it is currently the second worst performing deck in the format, according to the data. But also, that just means more goblins for me. But I really, like, this deck is really good. You just have to do some work for it.
And so is it fair to say, as somebody who has not like piloted the version that you are outlining here, but I have played against it a little bit more, like this is return to a true build around deck, right? Like these three cards, Boggart Cursecrafter, Boggart Mischief, Lasting Tarfire, are the build arounds.
Yep.
And you are putting the goblins around them that work the best with those three cards. And those three cards are your plan to win the game.
Yes. And it plays out. It is less like as a distinction from the blight decks, from red, white blight or black, white blight that care about manipulating minus one counters. This is a sacrifice deck, but instead of sacrificing stuff, you're blighting stuff to death. So it's an attrition. It's aristocrat-y kind of deck. And your blood artist is your Boggart Mischief.
Yeah, I'm here for it. I am jonesing to play some goblins.
I feel like we should do a draft.
We should do a draft. Why not?
Why not? It's our show. We do what we want. Do you have a preference? Have you looked at these two?
I have looked at the first one. I have not looked at the second one. And I think your first one's a great example of the hail thing. So let's get into it.
Okay. So pack one, pick one. I take an H. I get a haymaker card in my mind, which is Catharsis, one of the mythic elementals. This is 4 Boros Boros for 3/4. When it enters, if white was spent, you get 2 1/1s. If red was spent, you get all creatures you control get +1/+1 and gain haste until end of turn.
I'm smiling for the YouTube audience because I did not think this card was that good. And I built a red white deck finally that has Catharsis in it last night. And I cast it for the first time last night. And I was like, oh, it also gives itself haste.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
This is really dumb. Like,
yeah. So it's really dumb.
You get to attack with it as a 4/5 plus the 2/2/2s plus the rest of your team gets +1/+1 when you do both modes. It's really dumb when you cast it for red, red, white, white.
Yeah. And my thinking was, I'm happy to play a red, white, grindy blight deck. Maybe there's a Boros aggro deck where this will be good in. I would probably hope to not draft that. But I could play this in a red deck. I could play this in a white deck. Like, I think this is good. Pack one, pick two. See the following cards as options. There's a couple changelings. The Gangly Stompling, that's the Gruul 4/2 Trample. Feisty Spikeling is the Boros 2/1 first strike on your turn. There's Dawnhand Eulogist, the elf that gains and drains. There's Blight Rot, 2 and a black, put 4 -1/-1 counters on target creature. In the uncommons, there's a Warren Torchmaster, 1 and a red, 2/2. At the beginning of combat on your turn, you may blight one. When you do, target creature gains haste until end of turn. This is really good in the goblins deck because it's free blight and it's a 2-drop goblin. And there's a Burdened Stoneback as well, 1 and a white for a 4/4 giant that comes in with 2 -1/-1 counters. You can pay 1 and a white to remove a counter from this creature. Target creature gains indestructible until end of turn.
Torchmaster is in the dumpster with the data. Data doesn't like the Torchmaster. When I looked last night, I looked for the first time last night.
Data doesn't like red cards.
Yeah, that's fair.
I feel like I can't really even engage with it because I don't know how. I'm just like, I don't know what people are doing.
Yep, I agree. Red,
because it's different from what
where
I'm
it's
doing.
At. Yes, yeah. Very, very different from what both of us are doing, I think. So best card in the pack is... This is a weak pack.
It's a weak pack. Like, I mean,
a bunch of cards that are like C pluses.
Yeah, best card by the data might be Dawnhand Eulogist.
That would be a giant mistake to take here, in my opinion.
I agree. I am not interested in taking that card.
For me, it's between Burden Stoneback and Flock Imposter.
I'm not a fan of Flock. So Flock Imposter is the 2 and a white, 2/2 changeling flash flyer. When it enters, return up to one target creature you control to its owner's hand. There's not a lot of ETBs to rebuy, I've found.
There are good ETBs, and there's the enchantment removal. It does enough. It's not great, but neither is Burden Stoneback, in my opinion. Like, having to spend the 2 mana to take the counters off Stoneback is quite a bit.
Yeah, I guess so. But I don't have strong feelings.
You can hand me either Stoneback or Flock Imposter here, and I would be happy. It looks like you took the Stoneback.
I took the Stoneback, not to it being a 2-drop. Like, I mean, we haven't said this, but there's the similar thing of like, you don't want to fill up on twos, but it's very easy to fill up on threes in the format. And so when I can take a two a three.
Yes. Yeah. I think I like that. I like that tiebreaker.
Pack one, pick three, another weak pack. There's a Changeling Wayfinder, the 3-mana 1/2 that finds a basic land. There's Gravel Gill Scoundrel as the 1 and a blue 1/3 Vigi Merfolk. There's Brambleback Brute, the 2 and a red 4/5 that comes in with 2 -1/-1 counters. In the uncommon department, there's a Sting Slinger, 2 and a red, 3/3. You can pay 1 and a red, tap, light 1 to have it deal 2 damage to each opponent.
Yeah, this pack is not good. Again, I like your selection of the Sting Slinger. You've got some Blight. This is a way to start tying the room together with Blight, potentially. It gives you feelers into goblins, maybe. But yeah, I don't have any strong feelings about this pick, and I do like the Sting Slinger selection. I also think it's worth shouting out that you're going to have drafts like this, and if you're feeling the need to steer into one of the Typal decks already, I think you need to like check how you're engaging with drafting the format. Like, this is a low powered start, but I feel fine with where we're at. I don't feel pressured that like this draft is not going well at the moment.
I actively like this draft. I have Blights. I have -1/-1 counter synergy with the last two picks, and I'm in a position to play a Boros deck where I get both halves of Catharsis. Like,
correct.
And I've taken the best card arguably out of every pack. I'm thrilled currently with how I'm navigating this draft.
I agree, but I think if people are seeing the Merfolk decks, feeling the Elves decks, and feeling the pressure to get into those, like, you could be thinking, well, like, I don't know how I'm supposed to win with this against those decks. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Pack 1, pick 4. Another Changeling Wayfinder. Flame Chain Mauler, a card I've cooled on quite a bit since early access. The 1 and a red 2/2. Pay 1 and a red to have it get +1/+0 and menace until end of turn.
Yeah, that's a curve filler card, and it's one of the better curve filler cards, but it is ultimately curve filler.
There is a Blossom Bind, the 1 and a blue aura. Tap a thing. Can't become untapped and can't have counters put on it. Can't become untapped has come up multiple times. Like, my opponent played the Formidable Speaker, the JED's card that pay 1 untap, and they like thought they were going to get me, and then the arena flashed red when they did
it.
I was like, sorry, friend. Can't do it. And a card, shout out to you, a card that is excellent in this format, Thought Weft Imbuer. The 3 and a white 05 Kithkin Advisor. Whenever a creature you control attacks alone, it gets +X/+X until end of turn, where X is the number of Kithkin you control.
Yeah, that card is great. And I think this is exactly what Hale is asking you to do, which is, we have no Kithkin yet. It's pick 4. We see a Kithkin sign. We'll take this. Maybe we'll play Kithkin if it flows. Maybe we won't. But it's clearly the best card in the pack, and I think you're supposed to take it here.
And it's got the magic 5 toughness. Like, I just think Imbuer is good. And like, sure, if I get a Nuts Kithkin deck, great, but I'll play it in my Boros whatever deck here, you know? Pack 1, pick 5. It's signal time, as far as I'm concerned.
Yes.
There's a Boggart Cursecrafter in the pack, the black-red 2/3 Death Touch. There is also Gold Meadow Nomad, the single white 1/2 Kithkin. There is a Mischievous Sneakling, the Dimir Hybrid 2/2 Flash Changeling. But like, again, Cursecrafter, best card in the pack. And I will scrap these white cards if I like, because I've put myself in the position to be able to do that.
Well, and I think this is interesting to dial in on, because I think there's a world where some people take Thought Weft Imbuer and they're like, okay, Kithkin, and then they would take Gold Meadow Nomad.
Yes.
You could, I think that would be a gigantic mistake. Like, Gold Meadow Nomad is not a card in this format.
I agree.
So you take Cursecrafter, but you also can just not see goblins after this and be fine and be back on your red white path. Like,
correct.
This is a powerful position, right? You can be red white blight. You can be red black goblins. You can move into Kithkin if Kithkin synergies come. Like, you're very flexible, and you're going to have 3 to 4 of these cards in that final deck after 5 picks, no matter where you end up.
Mm-hmm. So the draft continues. I get another Sting Slinger pick 6.
Over Burning Curiosity, which we should note, right? Because we've been singing Burning Curiosity's praises. Can you talk about why Sting Slinger pick 6 over Burning Curiosity?
I only want one Burning Curiosity, and I don't think I need to take it here. This card has a 51.9% game in hand win rate. Like, people are not taking this card highly. I don't think I need to take it here. Feed the Flames pick 7. A Wretched Wretch, pick 8, that's the 2 and a black 4/2. If it dies and had a -1/-1 counter on it, it comes back with no text. In a pack where there's a Morkin's Eyes, pack 1, pick 8, which is way too late for that card, especially in the world of people drafting elves pretty aggressively, I think.
But you have no route to get in there. Like, you can't scrap this many picks in this format.
Yeah, I took a Bile Boggart here. I think it's also particularly good with double Sting Slinger. Biovile Boggart is sweet because, like, you blight onto it at instant speed and have the minus one counter as a trick in combat.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. So got Warren Torchmaster. And then I do end up moving off of the Boros stuff and getting a really nutso Goblins deck. I have double Curse Crafter, triple Eclipsed Boggart. I get the Goblin Champion late in the draft. And this got seven wins.
Yeah. And you dabbled in white still a little bit in pack two. Like you were in a very powerful spot in the draft.
Yes. Yeah. Like, and especially cause like that position, I'm like, I could go Boros. I could go Goblins. I could go Mardu. And
they also kind of overlap each other. That's this, what the synergies are asking of you.
Yeah. There's a tipping point where like you're finally like, okay, now I'm going to start giving weight to things that say Goblin to them, like once you decide you're going to be Goblins. But until then, you're like, I can do whatever.
The Hail method, folks. Haymakers, answers, identity, leverage. Any parting thoughts before we go?
Give Goblins some love. That's all I want to say.
All right. And on that note, time to head out. Thank you, as always, to Salty Pretzels for our intro and outro music. Make sure you give it a listen.
You can find all of our content at lordsoflimited.com. There is links to our episode backlog, our Twitch streams, our YouTube channel. Thanks for watching on YouTube. Our Patreon page, if you want to check that out, all of that is available at lordsoflimited.com.
If you've got any feedback about the show or any questions, shoot us an email at lordsoflimited@gmail.com.
Thanks so much for listening, and we'll catch you next week for another episode of Lords of Limited.
Thanks, everybody. See you later. We'll be right back.